Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with what appears to be a taunt by Senate Republicans to dare the Democrats to go ahead and make their day by changing the Senate rules to end the Republican abuse of the filibuster that just blocked Obama's latest nominee to the third of three vacant seats on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. A veteran Senate senior staffer, Mike Lofgren, the author of The Party Is Over, How Republicans Went Crazy, Democrats Became Useless, and the Middle Class Got Shafted, joins us to discuss whether Harry Reid will make good on his threat to invoke the so-called nuclear option. Then we'll go to Jordan to speak with Nicholas Herrer, a contributing editor and analyst with the international affairs journal Fair Observer. We will discuss the bombing of the Iranian embassy in Beirut and the war within the war amongst the Syrian rebels, where the more secular Free Syrian Army has clashed with the Salafist al-Nusra Front, who in turn have clashed with other al-Qaeda-affiliated groups like the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, turning northern Syria into a patchwork of warring fiefdoms. Then, finally, we will speak with Saudi expert Toby Jones, a professor of history at Rutgers University and author of Desert Kingdom, How Oil and Water Forged Modern Saudi Arabia. We will discuss the role of Saudi and Gulf money pouring into Syria in support of the hardline Salafist groups among the Syrian opposition, and the hollow nature of the Saudi regime's claim that in spite of a powerful secret police and omnipresent religious police that keep such a tight lid on the feudal kingdom, they are unable to stem the flow of private money funding al-Qaeda-affiliated groups in Syria. And joining us now is Mike Lofgren, who has spent 28 years working in Congress, the last 16 as a senior analyst on the House and Senate budget committees, which gave him ringside seats on TARP, Hurricane Katrina disaster relief, debates on the Pentagon budget, and the amazing antics of various deficit reduction commissions. He's the author of the new book, The Party Is Over, How Republicans Went Crazy, Democrats Became Useless, and the Middle Class Got Shafted. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mike Lofgren.
Good to be back, Ian.
And, Mike, on Monday, the Senate Republicans filibustered Barack Obama's third and final nominee to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. So this is following this, of course, was Robert Wilkins. Preceding him was Patricia Millette and Nina Pollard for the three vacant seats on this second most important court in the land. I would suggest that Mitch McConnell and the Republicans are basically taunting Harry Reid. Go ahead and make my day. End the filibuster. I mean, what explanation would you have for this brazen blockage?
Well, funny, that's exactly the word I was thinking about, taunting, because no one seemingly has raised any objections to the qualifications or any character flaws in the nominees. What they've done is simply, on a blanket policy basis, denied any of these appointees the right to serve when they're perfectly well qualified. What this is, it amounts to nullification. The discredited theory of John C. Calhoun in the early part of the 19th century that states or a minority of legislators could simply nullify the laws and workings of the federal government if they felt compelled to do so. We fought a civil war over that.
So is this then, if they've thrown down the gauntlet here, does this mean that Harry Reid is going to... I mean, first of all, one of the things that is, I think, a lot of people have been bothered by the fecklessness of the Democrats. And you, of course, in your book, The Party Is Over, How Republicans Went Crazy, Democrats Became Useless, and the Middle Class Got Shafted, in terms of the Democrats being useless. One of the things that's been pointed out by a number of people, and George Lakoff at Berkeley has written about this, the idea that the conservatives and the Republicans are so much better than at framing things. Like, for example, the right to life is a much more powerful concept than choice. And in this case, it seems that the Democrats have framed this issue incredibly poorly by describing the return to business as usual in the Senate as the nuclear option. It's not thermonuclear. It's not Armageddon. It's just going back to what you had before the Republicans usurped this position where they've arbitrarily decided that nothing passes the Senate unless it gets 60 votes. So do you see that as a problem, that they're talking about going nuclear when it's actually going back to business as usual?
Right. It could be called simply, we're going back to the constitutional option, because that is the way the Senate has mostly conducted its business throughout history without these kinds of filibusters. The only exceptions have been rather infamous ones in the gag rule over slavery and the filibusters over the civil rights bill. But under normal circumstances, and I'm looking at the Senate's own website on Senate action on cloture motions, which are motions that the majority leader must file to end a filibuster, a number of them are in the single digits in earlier years, or there's one. Sometimes you go through a whole session of Congress with zero filibusters. Then there's a gradual increase in the 1990s, and by the time we roll around to 2010, and that time with the Republicans in the minority in the Senate, it's 137 motions filed. So we have reached a stage where things are very much different from the way they used to be, and this is an extraordinary, as I put it, attempt at nullification.
Well, the Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Patrick Leahy says that, quoting him, this kind of delay for the sake of delay, this kind of treating this president different from other presidents, that is why there's momentum towards a change. Now, it's pretty clear that this filibuster light, where you don't even have to actually stand on the floor of the Senate and, you know, hold on to your bladder for 13 hours or whatever it is, you don't have to do that anymore, like in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. It's just a simple procedural motion. So you think Leahy's right, that this has a lot to do with the Republicans' contempt for our first black president?
There could be something to that. I noticed in the follow-up yesterday where Reid simply attacked the Republicans' filibustering, I noted that he didn't even say that he was going to try to change the rules, and Republicans openly taunted him and dared him to try to. Grassley, Senator Grassley, Republican from Iowa, for one, said, oh, you'll regret this if you do this, because in the future we'd like to put a lot more Scalias and Thomases on the court. Well, that sounds very interesting, except they've got Scalia and Thomas on the court. They were confirmed. Whereas the problem is Obama cannot get his appointees confirmed. So it's kind of an asymmetrical situation. Democrats have not to this extent ever filibustered when they were in the minority, and I doubt they would.
So what are, with the Republicans taunting Harry Reid to invoke the nuclear option, which we've already discussed as a terrible term because it exaggerates the reality of this is simply about going back to business as usual. So what options does he have then, short of ending the filibuster?
Well, I don't think he has any options other than that. This is a Senate rule that, in order to proceed without it, that rule must be changed or circumvented, and that's his only option to do that. It is not, I would hasten to add, some people either mistakenly think or assert that this is somehow part of the Constitution, that this is the way the Senate operates. It is not a part of the Constitution. It is simply a part of Senate rules. At one time, any senator could hold up proceedings for as long as he wanted, and there was no provision for cloture. That ended in 1917 by a change of the rules. In 1975, the currently in force rules called for two-thirds of the senators, 67, to vote to break the filibuster in order to get a vote, and that was changed to 60. So these are simply Senate rules. They can be changed, and they have been changed.
So what's your sense then of what Harry Reid should be doing? They had private meetings on Monday night after this third judge was denied his vote, in the Senate vote of 53-38, which is well below the 60 threshold. Two Republicans joining the Democrats, Senator Susan Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. So they apparently, Harry Reid met with his caucus on Monday night, and I believe they're having a lunch on Tuesday as well. What's your sense then of whether Harry Reid is going to step up here and explain to the American people that this is not a part of the Constitution? Isn't that what we really need here? People have to understand this is not the way business is meant to be done by the Founding Fathers. This is basically a Senate rule that's being abused.
Well, they need to engage in a little civics 101 to educate the population of what is and is not true. This has nothing to do with the so-called balance of among executive and legislative branch. It's not the whole sort of
separation of powers. You mean, yeah?
Separation of power, because what that means is that the various branches of government and their powers are balanced off one another by, for instance, a veto or a veto override. It does not mean that one half of the legislative branch simply isn't doing its job. It cannot pass any bills. That's the situation we have now. That has nothing to do with separation of powers or constitutional structures in the government, and people need to make that plain. But I'm afraid that the Democrats, as I've written before, tend to be very timid about their own convictions, and they may be in some ways a little afraid of the Republicans, the way a person might be afraid of his crazy uncle and just wants to kind of mollify him. But now that we've sort of put this whole filibuster issue out on the table and Democrats are complaining about it, it's a very poor threat if you threaten the so-called nuclear option and you're not willing to pull the trigger, and your opponent knows you're not willing to pull the trigger. That's worse than doing nothing.
Well, it seems to be a division within the Democratic caucus between the younger senators and the older senators. The older ones tend to be more leery about changing the rules and more sort of hidebound to Senate traditions, as opposed to the younger senators who are totally frustrated. Is that your reading as well?
Right. Most of the activists, and it may well be a majority of the Democratic caucus, has never been in the Senate except when the Democrats are in the majority. So they have no experience of the Republicans being the majority, or in which they would take advantage themselves, the Democrats, of the filibuster. So they don't really see any advantage to having the filibuster institutionally. And as for the older ones, to some degree, I suppose they're relics of an older Senate where there was more bipartisanship, and two senators across the aisle could get along and so forth, and maybe they really haven't woken up to it's not the way it used to be with Everett Dirksen and Mike Mansfield anymore. And so they're loath to change anything. They're somewhat reluctant to give up what might be a useful tool if Democrats are in the minority. But I tend to think because of psychological and other factors, they wouldn't use it as consistently and with as disciplined a way as the Republicans have in the last 4 or 5 years. Some people defending the filibuster allude to the so-called venerated traditions of the Senate, and that reminds me of when Winston Churchill became first Sea Lord in 1911, and he wanted to reform the Royal Navy, and all these barnacle-encrusted admirals said, you can't reform the Navy. Think of all the traditions. And Churchill simply harumphed and said, the traditions of the Royal Navy are rum, sodomy, and the lash. And I think from that we can also discern quite correctly that the traditions of the Senate in many respects in the last 200 years have been a defense of slavery, Jim Crow, and plutocracy. And they've done that quite effectively and kept the country from progressing in many important respects. And I don't think that's a tradition worth saving.
Well, just in closing, Mike Lofgren, do you think Harry Reid's going to man up?
I cannot make any prediction on that. He's got so many institutional headwinds and crosswinds. No one really runs the Senate, apparently. It's a kind of anarchy where a dedicated minority can get its way. And given what I've seen in policy lunches and things like that, just the way this a group of senators try to work their will, it would be somewhat surprising if they do it, but I think they must.
Well, Mike Lofgren, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Enjoyed being there.
And again, I've been speaking with Mike Lofgren, who has spent 28 years working in Congress, the last 16 as a senior analyst on the House and Senate budget committees, which gave him ringside seats on TARP, Hurricane Katrina, disaster relief, debates on the Pentagon budget, and the amazing antics of the various deficit reduction commissions. He's the author of the new book, The Party Is Over, How Republicans Went Crazy, Democrats Became Useless, and the Middle Class Got Shafted. We're going to take a brief station break, and we're back and go to Jordan to speak about the war within the war among the Syrian rebels.